Shalom Aleichem. I took upon myself something which I wasn't really sure what the type of an ilum comes to the physics, to the learning Torah way. So I figured I'll talk about something that's meaningful to me, and maybe some others could be mechuzik with it. I went in Panovich many years ago by Rav Chaim Levinson Zatzal, back in the 1960 area. And Rav Chaim used to talk about mitzvahs anashim elamada, that people get used to do mitzvahs without really thinking about the tachlis of the mitzvah, the reason for the mitzvah, what it's supposed to do for us. We look at it a little bit as a burden or as a standard thing, traditional. My father did it, everybody else does it, so we do the same thing. It's called mitzvah anashim elamada. He used to call it a trukin amaisa, a dry action. You do it because you do it. Everybody else, you were trained to put on tefillin, you were 13, and you keep on putting it on. I had the opportunity to daven here yesterday and today. So yesterday the davening took a little bit longer, and you were able, at my age it's hard to run, so I was able to keep up with the ilum. Today the Baal Tefillah davened a little bit faster, so it was difficult to keep up. You had to jog, and in the morning it's hard to jog. So I'm just saying you have to be a little bit aware of what's going on so you could take advantage of it. In the L'shem Yichud, before you put on tefillin, before you put on a talis, it seems to be pretty interesting that the mitzvah of tzitzis and the mitzvah of tefillin can have such an impact on a person. It says, "Hareinu misatav gufi b'tzitzis, kein tisatav nishmasi, ramachei varai shesagidai." I should be a zaycha to talis ma'alayla ma'ba, and this tzitzis should be matzo nafshi ruchi v'nishmasi u'tfilasi minachitzainim. It should have the effect that it should prevent and protect my soul and my neshama from the chitzainim. That means there are all types of different influences that happen in this world, and the tzitzis is going to help protect us from that. In tefillin, it says, L'zuchin Yisrael HaNatush Neged HaLeiv, that the tefillin Shalgad is Neged HaLeiv, opposite the heart. L'shabda B'zeh Ta'avos HaMashus V'len L'Avedosei. It should have the effect to control our desires, our machshavas. V'al HaRosh Neged HaMayach, that the neshama, that the mechi, imshar chushe v'ketoisei should be m'shabadon l'Avedosei. That's a very, very powerful ingredient that we have in the morning that it really controls us completely. I might be speaking in American English, so if I don't express it the right way, I hope you understand me. Every ma'aseh tov that a person does, every good deed that a person does, tzedakah, chesed, b'kachaylim, whatever a person has the opportunity to do, that mitzvah has an effect and somehow on his Ramach Evarim. That's our goal in life, and that's what we're here for. And it has an effect as we go along in life. And not only has an effect on us, it has an effect on others that see us doing it. I remember in Panovich, Rav Chatzki used to talk very much about coming to davening, not davening in the minyanim that are available out of the yeshiva, and to have a little bit of an achrayis for davening. So I remember there was an American bacha that came over to another bacha once, and he said to him, "Do you know that even though you sit on the opposite end of the Beis Medrash, when I watch you coming on time and I see that you daven slowly and properly, it affects me, because why can't I do the same thing?" So sometimes you feel you're davening someplace, who knows, who watches, but there could be, there's other people that you can influence while you're doing something good. So I was thinking of, where do you find that a ma'aseh has an effect on the hashpah? So we find it in this week's parasha in the opposite, in Rachmana Tzlana, in the Tumah. And we know that Kedusha, in reference to Tumah, has that much more of an effect, that if Tumah could do this, then Kedusha can do much, much more. In Pirkei Avos, it's brought down that the Pi HaAsayin was created Erev Shabbos. In Chashecha, like Erev Shabbos, before the Shkia, the Ravon Shem had to create a few things, the Pi HaAsayin, the Pi HaBe'er, the Pi HaAretz of Kairach. And the question is, the Pi HaAsayin, why was it so necessary for the Ravon Shem to create it? What would happen if the Asayin wouldn't have spoken to Bilam and given him the shmus that you're a menuvel, you're a low person, you're a shuffle, you say that lu yesh cherev biyadi, if I would have a sword, I would kill you, and you're going to kill Klal Yisrael with your mouth, so obviously you're a fraud, you're not, you're a corrupt person. And the Asayin gave him a musa shmus. The end result was that the Malach killed the Asayin, and the Asayin was no longer here. So for those few minutes that the Asayin opened its mouth and tried to affect Bilam's action, we needed that, importantly, in order to save Klal Yisrael. Why was that saving Klal Yisrael? I didn't see this anyplace, but I put it together, and if anybody saw it someplace, let me know. It says that Chazal say that just like Moshe Rabbeinu was a Navi by Klal Yisrael, so too Bilam was the opposite, was a Navi for the Umas Ha'ilam. Moshe was the Kayach HaKdusha and Bilam was the Kayach HaTuma. The Rabbi Hashem doesn't stop the Kayachas that are available in this world, that if somebody has the Kayach HaTuma, the Rabbi Hashem can't stop it and say, I'm taking it away from you. If Bilam had it, Bilam was able and capable, Rachman al-Islam destroy Klai Yisrael, like it says in the Pasuk, Ma Ezaim Lazam Hashem Ma Ekev Lekav Hashem Lazam Keil. It says, Bilam Hayyadeh Lechavan HaSashah. Bilam could have perhaps found the time that Rabbi Hashem was Zayim, was Kayes, was upset, and in that second or so he could have said the words Kalein Chaf Lamed Mem, which means destroy them, and it could have Taka affected Klal Yisrael to a degree of destruction. So why didn't Rabban Shem stop him? Because that's the kayach that Rabban Shem gave him. You can't take away something that you gave him. You gave it to him, it's the kayach atumah. He has control over it. So the Malach came along and tried to stop him. This one came along and tried to stop him. But everything that happened, he just kept on continuing. So there was a need in destroying the kayach of Bilam that he shouldn't be able to affect Klal Yisrael in a negative way. There's a in Parshas Vayetze where it says that Yaakov Avinu ran away with Rachel and Leah and the Shvachas and the children. It says that Rachel took the trophim from Lavan, the Avodah Zarah, and she took them along with her. And the Daskenim says, the Chazal, the Midrashim, why'd she take him? There were a few reasons. First of all, to protect her father, prevent him from being Avid Avodah Zarah. And second of all, that the Avodah Zarah, that Avodah Zarah was able to talk. Ayidei Kishif was able to say to Lavan that Yaakov ran northeast, or wherever he ran, and he just left a few minutes ago, and you'll catch him if you go that direction. So in order that they shouldn't tell Lavan where they're running to, she took along the trophim. So it's obvious that if she took along the trophim and Lavan came to search them later on, and it says, Vatikach Rachel as haTrophim vatasimim bekar hagomel, she put them in the pillow of the camel and she sat vateshev aleihem. And her father came by, she said, excuse me, I can't get up. And so the Zayar asked, why didn't the trophim talk? If they do talk, why didn't they say, we're under the pillow, you know, come and get us, save us from Rachel, she doesn't let us over the Avodah Zarah. And we had, with no reference to that, he just never found the trophim. So Zot Zayar, that trophim, the Kayach HaTumah and Avodah Zarah, only functions if Mechabdim Lefonav and Merafsim Lefonav, if you properly respect it and honor it, then it has the ability of performing. But if you don't properly respect it and honor it, then it doesn't perform. It can't perform when somebody's mevazeh it. The Gemara Megillah, I don't know which staff, says, Kol Litzenusa Asura. You're not allowed to make Litzanus. Chutz Litzenusa Aveidah Zarah. Aveidah Zarah, one could make Litzanus. And it's explained in Kabbalah, the reason for that is because Litzanus of Aveidah Zarah destroys the Kayach of Aveidah Zarah. Now, to destroy the Kayach of Aveidah Zarah, you could destroy it, so you make Litzanus of Aveidah Zarah. So it could be that we could also compare this to Kedusha. That Kedusha the Gemaisim also, the more honor and respect that you have for the Kedusha, the more it affects you. The less, then it doesn't. If Tuma works like that, Kamal Latzman, Elif Alfa Avdalis in Kedusha. So going back to the Pia Asayin accomplished that Bilam was no longer respected in the eyes of the Sarei Balak. The messengers of Balak, who he sent to bring Bilam along, lost respect for him. He was humiliated in their eyes by the Asan. The Kayach HaTumah and the Kayach that he had at Avodah Zarah was destroyed by the mere fact that the Asan opened its mouth and said factual things that happened with the Asan and Bilam, and who Bilam was and how he wasn't able to perform. He was a corrupt individual. When they saw that, they lost respect and honor for Bilam, and they came back to Balak, and they said to Balak, this man is a fraud. He's a criminal. He's nothing but a fraud. So the whole kayach of Bilam was destroyed in the eyes of Balak, and in the eyes of the Sarei Balak. Memela, his performance was weakened and destroyed. So that was why the Pia Asan was created, in order to have this effect that Bilam shouldn't be able to affect Klal Yisrael. So if we put that into our daily practice, as we do a mitzvah, and as we do Chas V'Shalom, we walk out in the street and we see other things happening, we're exposed to the outside environment. So it depends how much credence we pay to the outside environment, how much it affects us, the style, the lifestyle, the things, the priorities that the Goyim have today, the ability that we have to fall into the traps of what's available to us today, if it's the internet, if it's the televisions, if it's the movies, if it's just walking the street, if it's the advertisements, if it's everything, I don't know if you say advertisements here, but whatever it is, if you understand it, that exposure has a tremendous effect. Well, a young man asked me this morning here, he said, so how do you watch your children? How do you make sure that they don't get affected? So I said, if your children see that you honor the davening, it's not a burden to you. Shabbos is a pleasure to you, that you have menuchas hanefesh, you learn, you daven, you have sedarim, you sing zemiras. It's a certain atmosphere that's created that the children and the people around you and the Shechinim and your friends see that you enjoy this. You have hanach from being a Jew, being a frumah yid. You're not looking to see, could you be kagayim? Could you act like the goyim? Could you be like the goyim? Could you emulate them? And you don't emulate them. You're not machshav of them. By not being machshav of them, it has a reverse effect. That now, by not being machshav of them, they can't affect you. A frumah yid walking around with a yarmulke, with tzitzis, looking like a Jew, acting like a Jew, can't do certain things that the goyim do. You feel uncomfortable doing it. You feel uncomfortable going into a place. I took myself an opportunity yesterday to travel on a bus to, I think it's Victoria Station. And I figured I'll go see what happens with the changing of the guards. I almost didn't see any frumah yid, and I felt a little bit awkward there, that I guess it was not the time when the frumah yid go on a tour in the middle of the summer, maybe the winter time, but whatever. I was one frumah yid looking around. I think we saw one more, and I was just amazed by the hundreds and hundreds, well, some are thousands if I'm correct, but hundreds for sure, of tourists from throughout the world watching the changing of the god. I don't know, but I guess we're not allowed to be mavazed the changing of the gods. It's a hush of a thing. But to me, I was trying to figure out what happens before, afterwards, during. What are they trying? The Kavod HaMalchus. That means we're honoring and respecting the great queen or kayach of the Malucha, of the kingdom, in this fashion. It affects the entire people that come there and the entire world who sees it or hears about it, because we raise the value of whatever it is. We prepare the people's minds that this is a great thing. So when the queen ever enters someplace, you remember everything that went on around her. The guards and the marching and the police and the security and everything that's going on for this Heilige Queen. So if a person does the same in our Torah life, in our Yiddish life, and we honor and respect the Lachnasa Sefer Torah, somebody gives money to a gamach, and a lot of people like to be humble about when they give tzedakah, why should we make a tumah, why should we put up plaques, but it's brought down that it is kedai because the people get chizik from that, and the people become strengthened, and the environment becomes valuable. People see that this is a chashuv thing to give a Sefer Torah, to give to a Gemilas Chesed, to collect for Shabbos, Aniyim LeShabbos. You go shopping in a store, they have these cards in America, I'm sure they have it here also, that you take off a dollar or two and you say, a pound or two, whatever they call it, and you say, I'm giving this for this people that don't have to eat in Shabbos. Baruch Hashem, we should be happy that we go around and we have money that we need, and we shop, and we do. Why don't we think about the others that don't have it, that perhaps they can't even eat flesh if they're Shabbos? When you do that, and your child or somebody next to you sees this man takes off a dollar from his shopping, a pound, and he gives it into the tzedakah, it has a tremendous effect. It raises our values, and it has a meridic effect on us. The Chafetz Chaim says that if you're 100% Jew at home, then you're 50% Jew outside your home. That means in your home, nobody stops you from being 100% Jew, or let's say in a shul, in a beis hakness, in a beis medrash, in an environment that you feel comfortable doing what you're supposed to do, you feel comfortable, so you do 100% of what you could do, or more than you do when you're outside. He says, and therefore when you go out, it gets affected negatively, and now you're only 50% of what you're at home or what you're in shul. And if you're 50% at home, then it's a quarter when you go out. So he says a Jew has to make up his mind that he wants to be 100% Jew where he could be 100% Jew. That means if the davening could take a half hour, and with an extra 10 minutes you have a little bit extra kavana, and it's difficult for you to daven in that minyan, so you have to be a man and pick another minyan where you can daven a little bit longer. Because you could miss Kedusha, you could miss Kaddish. I'm saying Kaddish, but I skipped one Kaddish because it was impossible for me to say it as fast as the Batfilla. And I would bumble, humble, bumble, and I wouldn't say the Kaddish. And my father wouldn't get any schus from a Kaddish that I would skip here for the Kaddish. So it has an effect. The Kaddish becomes fierce, the davening becomes fierce, the Krishna becomes fierce, the Shemanasha becomes fierce, and everything goes. So what do you think is going to happen when you go out into the business world? I once saw a story of a young man who was going to college to become an attorney, university to become an attorney. And I was once visiting in L.A., and I visited with my Talmidim, and I said over the story just to give them chizuk, how a person has to be strong in what he believes. This young man, when he went to college, he was from a family, religious family. He wore yarmulke while he was in school. And he was one amongst many others who were wearing a yarmulke, but he was. And he was doing well, so the dean used to meet him every once in a while and said, young man, this yarmulke is going to cause you a lot of problems in the future. It's not going to help you. Attorneys today that are working the big firms are not frumayidin, and they're not looking for people with yarmulkes to present them in court, And they're not looking for criminal lawyers for sure, but there are criminal lawyers that are from a Yidden, as you know, in America. There's a fellow by the name of Nate Lewin who's a tremendous from a Yidden and one of the biggest attorneys. But not many have the ability to convince themselves that if they become from an Erlich and they wear a yarmulke, they're going to make it into law school. So the dean kept on telling me, he says, no, sir, I wear a yarmulke, that's part of my religion, I'm not taking it off. And so on, he went through school, he was on the dean's list, he finished school. The big law firms come into the school and they ask the dean, could you give us a list of the 10 top students? We want to interview them for jobs. And this fellow came along and he got the name and he said to him, this fellow looks pretty capable. He says, he's a religious boy, he wears his yarmulke, and this is him, he doesn't want to change. He says, I would be interested in meeting him. He said, okay, we'll set up the interview. And they set up the interview, and he comes into this waspy firm, he says, the names, Italian names, I guess some of them were Jewish, but you know, you don't know if Cohen is Jewish today, or maybe somebody else. And he goes in, and he's sitting in the lobby, and he's debating, obviously, in his mind, I have an opportunity to get myself, land a good job, and in the future, I have parnasa, I'll be able to learn daf yomi in the morning, make it into the business, be an erlich yid, come back at night, learn with my children, but I have to decide, do I want to wear my yarmulke or not? Because if I don't, if I put on my yarmulke and I keep it on now, I might not get this interview successfully done, and then they won't get the job. And he's debating, and he's called in, the door opens up, and says, sir, are you Mr. Cohen? He says, yes, come right in. And as he was going in, he couldn't hold out. He put his yarmulke in his pocket. He felt, this is it. If I don't make it now, I'm not going to make it. He just couldn't get over there, and he walked into the meeting, and on the table sitting a few men, and on the head table sitting a man, white hair, with a white Yom Kippur yarmulke on his head. And he felt he couldn't take the yarmulke out of his pocket now. And the man says to him, sir, Mr. Cohen, are you religious? He says, yes, I am. He says, okay, have a seat. Yeshua Mashal says, yes, I am. He says, okay, have a seat. They talked about whatever it is. And he said, thank you so much for coming. I wish you hatzlacha, whatever it is. And he went home. And he went to the dean in a few days. He said, did I get the job? He says, no. He says, could you find out why not? He says, of course I can find out. He says, did you wear your yarmulke? He says, I didn't. He says, really? And you still didn't get the job? Amazing. Let me find out for you. And he makes the call, and he says, we were interested in taking this young man because of his determination and his stubbornness, and we knew that he's somebody who nobody's going to bend. If we have an attorney that's defending our client, we want somebody who's going to be doing the thing for what the thing is worth, not because what somebody else will feel that it's not the right client for him, he's going to change. I don't want anybody to change. If he walked in without a yarmulke to our office for an interview, he took off his yarmulke because he was pressured under the spur of the moment, we don't want that kind of an attorney. Mm-hmm. So I was saying over the story, so one of my Talmidim raised his hand, Rebbe, that was me. I said, what do you do now? I'm an attorney, but not there. Okay, he's Baruch Hashem Matzliach, and he's learned the daf, and he's an LSE, but I'm saying there are things that we do that are required for us to do. It doesn't pay for us to give in to our Yetzer Hara and say, well, today not, maybe tomorrow, maybe not, and maybe this. A person is affected by the actions that he does, and the determination and the kaychus that he puts in are very, very helpful for him. I was thinking about, it says in the Ava Rabba, it says, V'horer enenu b'sar asecha, v'dabek lebeinu mitzvasecha, v'yachel uvenu l'ava l'yerushamecha. So it talks about having the chizuk in Torah, our leif should be connected to the mitzvahs, we should have the ability to love Hashem, and then it says, v'loy nevoish l'olam v'ad, and we shouldn't be embarrassed or shameful l'olam v'ad. And it really doesn't fit into this whole bakasha. Torah, mitzvahs, yichud Hashem, la'ava, shemecha, all of a sudden, v'loy nevoish. I was thinking that it's a simple explanation about going back to what we discussed in the beginning, that a person does a ma'isa without any kavana. So if you put on tzitzis without thinking about it, or you put on tefillin without proper thought about it, what you're doing, or you're doing a mitzvah, you come la'asad lavay, and they say to you, okay, what'd you do? He says, I put on tefillin every day. He says, really? What kind of tefillin did you put on? We don't have the straps even, like, what did you do? Well, these are, that's what they told me to do. Yeah, but do you have any kavana? No. So the tefillin, like, is a halba mitzvah. The tzitzis is a halba mitzvah, so we're going to be embarrassed. We did all the mitzvahs that are required from us, and we're not even getting the schar the way the mitzvah. That means the mitzvah could produce 100 points or it could produce 10 points. Why'd you take the cheap way out? You should have produced 100 points for the tefillin. We shouldn't be embarrassed in the future when we get the schar for the mitzvah. It shouldn't be embarrassing to us that we didn't even do the mitzvah with the proper kavana. In education, the philosophy is that you have to have positive motivation. At a home, when a parent wants to convince a child to do something, you can do it in a negative way. You're no good, you always aggravate me, you never do what I tell you to do, you come home, you don't do well in school, you know, I mean, I'm not giving you the allowance this week. There's a very, very easy way to do that. That's much easier for a parent to do that, because that's the authority that a parent has over a child, that I can reprimand you and tell you how bad you are, and if you're not going to become better, then you're not going to get what you're supposed to get. In the Rabbanus, meaning in the teaching, it also was like that. A Rebbe has a tough day sometimes at home, or whatever it is, and a child comes into class. He didn't bring his homework sheet signed. He wasn't dressed properly. He didn't put his coat in the right hook. And the Rebbe reprimands him, sends him to the principal, etc., etc., and creates a negative feeling in the child's mind. And it could affect the child for many, many years. So they say you have to have positive motivation. That you can't talk to a child or to an individual in a negative way. So I was thinking in the Pirkei Avos, it says, "Histakel b'shloisha dvarim ve'ein atabala de'aveira." The Chazal are trying to give us chizuk that we shouldn't do any aveiras. Ma'ayim basa olan atahaylach lefnei miyata asa litendim v'cheshbon. That's a very, very strong negative implication. Who are you? Are garnished? Where you going? And dread. And what are you going to do? So what are you playing? You know, so why don't you do some mitzvahs? It's a very, very strange way of giving a person chizuk. Like, you're nobody and you're not going to be anybody and you're going to pay the price. So, like, why don't you get moving and, you know, start davening? It can't be that Chazal is saying that. So what is it? So I thought just for a minute. Ma'ayim basa taka. Nothing. But what's your potential? You know, I gave you an opportunity. It shouldn't be nama dechisufa. It shouldn't be embarrassing when you come to Yanavel. You didn't do mitzvah. I'm giving you an opportunity of your lifetime. You can do a mitzvah of tzedakah and get thousands of points. You can do tefillin. You can do tzitzis. You can do Shabbos. You can do Torah. You can do halacha. You can do nach. You got so much going for you. La'anat ha'haylech. Where are you going? You're going l'makom rima yaguf, but your neshama is going to the highest madrega of ruchnius, to olam ha'asida lavay, to olam haba, to give a cheshbon lefnei melech malchem lach. He gave you that opportunity from who? From a nothing, from a fly, from a rima v'seleah, from nothing. So I gave you this opportunity. How could you not take advantage of that? How could you not be a happy person and say, the guy came from the same type of a seed, and he's nothing, he doesn't even have that opportunity. But look at you. You have such a great opportunity in Torah and Mitzvah and Maisa. How could you not? So Faked, it was a positive influence. It was not in a negative way. We look at it as a negative. No. Look who you came from. Look what you came from. And look at your opportunity that's available. We should be Zeicher that we should do the Mitzvahs and the Maisa and Torah, whatever we have, understanding that it influences us and it influences all around us.